Morning!
Morning!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal.
Hey Bunty, greetings from San Francisco and happy Republic Day to you. It's, still Republic Day in India. It would be 11:30 p.m. Jan 26th and it's obviously morning Republic Day here and it's Republic Day in England. So it's a nice kind of time window. So, you know, how are things with you in general?
Things are good, Rohit. And, you know, it's a bit bleak wind, kind of early Jan rain in London. And it's a bit dark. But I think, as you rightly said, it's a happy Republic Day to our listeners. When I was growing up, I always got confused between Republic Day and Independence Day. So 26th January and August 15th, these dates would play havoc in my head. And I'm talking about when I was at an impressionable age, like between 5, 6, 7, right? Because what would confuse me was why on Republic Day would there be marching and on Independence Day there wouldn't be marching, right?
Good point.
So you remember A.K. Ghosh Memorial School?
Yeah,
those guys would be practicing, right? So they'd be practicing through November, December to parade around the block to coincide with the Republic Day. So what would be happening in Delhi? Schools across the country would be marching. If there was a playground, they'd do it there. And I was very perplexed. The boss, apna ye marching August 15th ki nahi hota. August 15th, you just raise a flag, sing Jana Gana Mana, and then that's done. But on Republic, and I would genuinely enjoy watching Republic Day telecast because, you know, you as a kid growing up in the 70s, 80s, that was the one time where you'd see an organized display of the state. And I don't think I was holding back for the Republic Day, you know, the floats for Tripura, Mizoram, Orissa. That never did it for me. But, you know, Rajputana Rifles, Shankar Singh, marching from the top.
There would always be that.
It's remarkable. It's a remarkable ritual that happens.
Yeah,
and, you know, what are your memories of Republic Day?
I think, first of all, holiday. So that, you know, but I do remember, you know, watching the parades with some interest. And again, you know, when you're a kid, you're, you know, maybe it's conventional gender socialization or whatever, but like you're into, you know, tanks, etc. So I would always be very impressed by those tanks. But yeah, you know that, I mean, again, nothing against the indigenous dancing cultures of, you know, Orissa, Tamil Nadu, etc. But the mode in which the Indian state and government entities in general showcase culture is, you know, now I realize that, I mean, there are all kinds of politics around it, but it was always very dull, you know. So, you know, 80 different kinds of dances, you know, like, you know, Bihar, like Chhat Puja special and all. I mean, that didn't kind of do it for me either. But yeah, I liked watching the crisp marching. And to me, you know, we have to do a series of episodes at some point of time about Indian schools. Now, to me, that was an amazing contrast from the kind of march past that used to happen in my school. So, you know, and first of all, in Indian schools, the model of discipline followed, derived from, you know, Victorian models of discipline in British India. But I remember that, you know, for sports day, there would be like lots of rehearsals. And it would be like, attention, and then stand at ease.
Yeah.
It took me a very long time till I actually realized that it was stand at ease. I always used to think it was standitis. But, you know, okay, so that, and then that throw into the mix the fact that PT teachers are generally sadistic bastards in India.
That they are everywhere in the world.
Yeah, so, you know, what would happen is, and, you know, even I was at the receiving end of it once or twice. I mean, 90% of my school teachers would be in jail in America on grounds of assault or one kind of like physical abuse or another. Hindi teacher, thrashing guy, you know, PT and Hindi teachers, two most frustrated. So my memories were that, you know, march past was done very sloppily. And no matter what was happening, and suddenly, you know, like PT teacher, you know, either Mr. Biswas or Wells, suddenly arriving with cane and, you know, left, right, center, like whacking guys on the ass. Come on, straight, this, that. So, despite that, it was by and large a fairly shabby, uncoordinated performance. And then you saw Rajputana Rifles, you know, guys like kicking that leg up like that, amazing mood.
I'll tell you a completely different aspect of the Republic Day. So, you know, there'd be a march past with big trucks carrying rockets or missiles. Right? So you must think of me as an 8-year-old whose only previous exposure to rockets has been Diwali. Now, so I would desperately, as the trucks drove by, right, I would try and find out where was the fuse that they had to light, right? And what my father did was he would play this game where he would say that, you know, I saw the fuse, but you couldn't spot it. Right? And it was a very sweet game that we used to play with each other. And I think that, you know, and I think, Rohit, as we speak, you know, we will come to, you know, the state of the nation and other things that are going on. But I do hope that in homes and, you know, families across India, in spite of the great upheavals in public life that we see, that a little of that joy and a little of that magic of watching our country's armed forces in a parade, cultural kind of representations as seen fit by bureaucrats, you know, folks who enjoy that. So I hope there is some of that goodness still exists, and that because that's so tied up with my imaginings of Republic Day. But and that feeds into the fact that it took me a long while. I still get confused between Republic Day and Independence Day. Should we now explore what Republic Day is as a concept? Because then that kind of piggybacks into what we can widely talk about. Republic Day as a celebration of the constitutional entity that is India?
That's it. That's exactly it. And, you know, I'll leave it to you. But what I want to say is that we are at a very interesting moment where what's happened is that there is, despite these being very dark times with, you know, what the Modi government has embarked upon, we are at an actually very interesting moment where you find citizens from all walks of life, and especially women in the Shaheen Bagh protests against the CAA, they have reclaimed the idea of the republic against, and they have strongly asserted the foundations of that vision that Republic Day embodies. They have very strongly asserted that vision, those foundations, against what was happening with a Hindu nationalist party seeking to completely eviscerate and, you know, undermine those. So we are at an amazing kind of moment, and I have never seen this in my life. You know, I was too young to remember the emergency and the backlash against it. But I, you know, much of what was happening in India, it seemed like there was apathy. And then, you know, till very recently, it just seemed like the BJP government, the Hindu nationalist project, was running roughshod. And I should just digress here to say that, you know, even as we speak, there's an interview doing the rounds on Twitter of a person from the Hindu Mahasabha saying that for them, Republic Day is a black day. For them, Independence Day is a black day. They don't celebrate either 26 Jan or August 15th because India was a constitutional secular republic and not a Hindu Rashtra. And these are people who've been, you know, holding this position for years. The RSS till very recently flew black flags on August 15th. None of them have ever been called anti-national. It's Muslims, you know, people who stand for secularism, other minorities, Dalits, critics of, you know, Hindu nationalism, who've been tainted with that. But it's all those beleaguered groups in a Hindu nationalist government who have suddenly asserted this vision of constitutionalism. So it's really, I think this is a very special Republic Day, despite the darkness all around, metaphorically speaking, and it speaks to exactly, you know, what you were talking about in terms of what that meaning of Republic Day is. So yeah, maybe if you could just, you know, share a little.
Okay. Let me unbundle Republic Day using civics knowledge. You know, remember we used to study history and civics. Yeah.
Right. 80% of paper history, 20% civics.
Correct. And 20% civics was the bit where you learned about the Constitution, the preamble, and the Republic. And I remember our history teacher, who was a very interesting and passionate lady, who I will not shout out at the moment because, you know, I don't want to embarrass her.
No. I think you should say it. Bunty, teachers, as a teacher, I can tell you that there's nothing more gratifying than, you know, a student telling you that something you taught them, you know, stayed with them. So I think you should
go ahead. So there was this lady called Nadira Shah, right? Who taught us ancient history? So she was, she brought to life a lot of kind of the history of the Rajputs, the Mughals, the great dynasties. And then as we kind of wound our way through the history lessons, as you said, on the 20% of the time, she talked about the constitution. And she explained to us that the idea of the republic was before India became independent and declared itself a republic, it was always a coalition of kingdoms, either a big kingdom with smaller kingdoms around it or many small kingdoms, right?
Yeah.
This was the first time where we decided that the head of state is not going to be somebody who has a God-given right to rule over others. It is going to be somebody who is going to be, the head of state is going to be essentially an elected figure, right? Mm-hmm. And we are unique in the Commonwealth as among one of the first countries, and a very large populous country, because, you know, Australia and Canada and New Zealand, South Africa to a certain extent, all of the other former, what let's call it the white Commonwealth, kind of stuck to the Queen. Right?
Hmm.
India was one country which said that no, you are getting independent, we will need to figure out our own head of state arrangement, and therefore it's not a monarchy, it's a republic, right? That was the first kind of thing that was called out. The second thing that went hand in hand with the idea of us being a republic, which is there's no Raja Rani business, was the fact that, you know, there was a constitution that would safeguard the republic. And in the constitution, there were very many words, right?
Hmm.
Democratic was one of them. Secular was another one. As I said, I'm leaning back on history, school history. I haven't been in touch with the technical details. But I think we circle back from my history lessons and understanding of history, the idea of the republic, and the fact that there's a constitution which safeguards the republic. Cut to present day, where both of us, in our discussions that we've had over the last 3 years now, we realize there's a gradual erosion on the values that were, you know, that were held sacred in our constitution. I remember a time in the 80s where there was a playwright who called Mahatma Gandhi a baniya bastard.
It was a guy called Ashok Rao Kavi, I think.
And as a result of that, there was a huge kind of backlash that how could you call the father of the nation, a baniya bastard, right? Cut to today, where I think not a single set of months go by, not a couple of months, where some person from one side of the political spectrum will call out that, you know, they won't say probably anything against Mahatma Gandhi, but they would make glorious noises about the fact that he was killed and the manner in which he was killed, right?
Mm.
Which kind of loops back into your understanding of what you were calling about the Irish. So I think that, you know, we are at a very interesting juncture where there's been a gradual erosion of what the Constitution was, right? Mm. And not only is it a sad state of affairs, but it's lamentable that it has got to this.
Hmm.
And it's lamentable because the opposition that should have been in place to counter this is that I think the reason it's dark is because there isn't a knight in shining armor, right?
Hmm.
Waiting to take a stand at a national level
hmm.
and hold people to account. At the moment, all the discussions against, and the CAA is a manifestation of that, where we are kind of tinkering with the constitution. All the opposition has been very localized. There has been widespread protests in places. But I am fearful. So on the one hand, I'm happy about, you know, celebrating a Republic Day and feeling very proud to be from India, of India. But it's an ambivalent feeling. I do not know for how long and in what shape and in what form.
Oh, yes. I think your apprehensions are very well-founded. And this is, whatever happens with the CAA and the NRC, I think, you know, or the fact that at the municipal level as we speak, the BJP is losing elections, whether it's to the CPIM or whether it's to either the Congress or whatever, The larger damage has been done. It's going to take years for this, you know, even if it's going to be entirely possible at all to begin with in the first place, for this kind of Hindu nationalist poison, and I don't think I'm being polemical when I use that word, to kind of get out of the body politic of Indian society. So yes, absolutely, it's going to be a long-drawn struggle. And, you know, again, the politicians are kind of hedging their bets because there's a massive vote bank, which I understand, that they see as, which I think that they understand is still, you know, fairly jingoistic, fairly communal in the Indian sense of the term. And they want to tread very cautiously with alienating that. The flip side is that they, you know, by staying away, they are not tainting the protests. So they're not as being politically motivated, because the BJP, you know, propaganda and garbage machine is in full flow. So I just want to end, though, on, you know, with agreeing with those and sharing your apprehensions and completely, just a small kind of note that there's a tweet by Professor Kaushik Basu. He's an economist at Cornell. I think he was the chief economist of the IMF or the World Bank. I don't know. But, you know, I love reading what he has to say. He talks in general about, you know, many things on Twitter. And he's from the generation of Indians, you know, the generation that our parents are from, for whom that vision of Nehru was a very real vision. And that informed the way in which, you know, you and I both grew up, right? I don't think that, you know, when it, you know, if there was a new kid who moved into our neighborhood and the kid came and he wanted to play, you know, hand cricket with us, with our tennis ball cricket, or, you know, hand tennis on the streets of Calcutta, on the streets of Lee Gardens, I don't think we ever bothered asking about religion and, you know, those things were just really so far from our minds.
Correct.
So, you know, and again, I understand that, you know, that also is a certain kind of privilege about being able to not be concerned about identity. But there's another sense in which, you know, this was not just lip service. So Kaushik Basu says that, this is a tweet. He says, watching India today, one marvels at the audacity of Nehru's vision. Building an open society with freedom of expression, universities where students could contest Nehru's ideas, own ideas, the right to practice one's own religion or not practice any, we rightly commanded global respect. So I thought this was quite beautiful.
It was remarkable, those words, and I think there's much to be said. I think I would like to end at a different point, right?
Yes.
I think we are looking for course correction, right, as a nation, right? We're looking for course correction. And I will say this. I will say that after the first 10, 15 years of independence, where the euphoria subsided and we got busy pulling the nation out of essentially a very agrarian, poverty-stricken economy, the way the British had left us, we through our kind of convoluted five-year plans, we kind of came out of it and we became a growing economic force. What happened, I think, somewhere after the emergency, right, or at about that point in time, these are very broad brush strokes, right? I think the Congress regime that came into power kind of overcompensated, I won't call it what it is, minority appeasement in different parts of the country to stay in power, right? And that set the rot for, so I'm saying that Nehru started a project, which exactly as Kaushik points out, is a phenomenal imagining of what we could be as a nation, right? That was compromised, not in its current form, but the compromise started earlier on with successive Congress regimes who played up particular faith or caste-based politics. What has happened now in the last 8 years is you've got a group of people who have outmaneuvered the Congress in playing this kind of vote bank politics by playing the bigger card, right? So going back to what I originally said, that I think we are at a point where we have to kind of restart and reorient. And I think my hope for this Republic Day is that we find a political point of view as a country which allows us to kind of reboot and start over. Because I think not for the last 10 years, obviously the last 8 years have been horrible, but the times before that led up to this 8 years, and we can't forget that.
Sure.
And I'm thinking that in the last, we need now in a country like India, a fresh imagining of politics, a leader or a leadership that is able to move away from this Congress rubric, and obviously the BJP rubric. And I don't know who that is or what that is, But that would be the hope of the project to work for. That would be my concluding thought.
Right. And I'm just going to complement that with one idea. I think what you said just now is, again, something that deserves not one but several, you know, episodes where we continue talking about different aspects of the many complex issues you raised. One thing I want to mention is that I think now, you know, in terms of historical experiences, in terms of our understanding of, you know, how identity works, the complex nature of identities, not just in India, but anywhere, the notion that you can just be this universal Indian and you must somehow transcend your other identities, I think is a naive idea. So I don't think being an Indian and being a Hindu, I don't think being an Indian and being a Dalit, being an Indian and being a Muslim, being an Indian and being, you know, from a particular ethnic or linguistic community, I don't think those were envisaged by Nehru as being mutually opposed. So sometimes I see people saying that, you know, I don't care about my caste, my religion, we are first Indians. And I think it's kind of naive to pit one against the other, because especially for groups that are marginalized, you know, whether you think of Dalit groups in Punjab or you think of, you know, Muslims, their identity in that group is also very fundamental to them. And that identity is the basis of mobilization for good you know, outcomes and good objectives as well. And it is not the case that, you know, privileged Hindu caste groups do not use their Hindu identity. It's just that that Hindu identity is so ubiquitous that we don't recognize it as such. So I want to just end with a statement from a very famous human rights activist. He was the first, Chief Justice of South Africa after apartheid. He was a gentleman named Justice Albie Sachs, and someone who was, you know, he spent his life being busy in the anti-apartheid movement. He, in fact, lost his limbs because of a pro-apartheid person bombing him or trying to kill him, planting a bomb, and he even forgave that man. And he has this very interesting remark, which is, human rights are about the right to be the same and about the right to be different. And I think that Nehru's vision of the Republic understood that. And I think the model of identity and politics and belonging that you mentioned going forward, I think should really echo that, or should seek to capture that spirit in you know, of Nehru's vision.
I think that's a good note to end, Rohit. And we again take the opportunity to wish all our listeners a very happy Republic Day. Hope you'd had a fantastic kind of holiday and stepped back from work and done interesting things. Catch up on the next episode, Rohit.
All right. Take care, man. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to us. Rohit and Bunty would like to sign off. Please stay tuned. Follow us on India Explained on Twitter. Keep listening. Thank you for all your support.